Pod.
Rugby pod.
Hello and welcome back to the Rugby Pod. I'm Andy Rowe. Big Jim and Goody are with me as usual. And we've got South African World Cup winner Faf de Klerk joining us on the show today, telling us what he was really chatting to Prince Harry about in his Budgie Smugglers, as well as talking all about Sale and the British and Irish Lions tour.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200 or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to keep you connected and moving together as one.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
And we've got a bit of news for you before we start. The Rugby Pod live show at the Clapham Grand is back, and it's set for Saturday the 26th of June.
Yeehaw!
Tickets are currently sold out, but make sure you get on the waiting list via dice.fm in case there are any returns from people who can't make the new date. And we're hoping for a few more live shows coming up soon as well. And we'll let you know as soon as they're confirmed.
Talking of live shows, as we know, the world seems to be opening back up now. So I'm thinking, I get online, start booking a beer garden every night. These live shows, this could be the first time I'm going to speak about myself in the third person. The picture of the legend could be in a pub because they're all booked.
You have to know people in the know, Jim.
So the live shows are my only way out of this, it seems. That's the light at the end of my tunnel. So I'm trying to suppress my excitement here. I'm very much looking forward to these live shows. I don't know how many we've got. I'm just hoping that there's one a day, one a week. I'm easy.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Imagine the taste of that first pint of Guinness and blackcurrant at a live show. It would be absolutely delicious. But here's the thing. Just tell Beck there's four on the trot in London. That's all you need to know. And we'll be out. We'll be out somewhere, whether there's a live show or not. And as for the fact that we've sold it out, the first one, we might as well do four back to back. Everyone will want to come. Everyone wants to get out of the house. Everyone wants to get away from the kids. I love my kids. I love the nanny. But oh my goodness, live shows are coming back and it is time to celebrate.
Make sure you go to dice.fm and get on the waiting list, because that's how you know when the other live shows are coming up as well. And you'll get a call up if other people can't make that date. Goody, Easter and your birthday on the weekend. How much chocolate did you eat? How many calories did you count?
Not only was it my birthday on Saturday, and I followed the government guidelines, as I have done throughout this lockdown period. And the government guidelines suggested that if you had a birthday in lockdown, you don't have to add a year to your life. Now, I've had two, so I'm still 39. And it was my birthday Saturday, and I had the pleasure, actually, of driving to Exeter for 4 hours on Saturday to commentate on Exeter against Lyon and then drive 4 hours back. So we didn't do my birthday till Sunday, which was Easter Sunday, and my dad's 70th as well. So not only did I have a birthday cake from the twins, my dad had a birthday cake from me, the missus and the twins, and there were Easter eggs, and so my calorie intake's just been horrific, let me tell you.
Hit us with a number. What kind of number would you say on Sunday? Do you even know?
I don't even know, mate. I mean, the amount of chocolate eggs that not only we got for the kids, we did a big Easter egg hunt around the garden. Mum and dad bought them Easter eggs. Carolyn's mum and dad bought them Easter eggs. The nanny, Amanda, I won't say her surname, but she's the best lady in the world. She bought them Easter eggs. There's too many Easter eggs. There's only one place they're going. And when they've been a bit naughty, I call them Miss No Treats, Miss No Easter Eggs. Daddy gets all the Easter eggs, and that's all that happens. So I reckon 10,000 in one day, quite comfortably.
Our kids ended Easter Sunday with me telling them that the Easter Bunny ain't real, because they are on to me about more chocolate. And I've gone down the process of saying, right, you're going to be sick. Your teeth are going to fall out, to the point where I'm just sat there with a dram, with a whiskey in my hand, saying, the Easter Bunny doesn't exist. Beck's screaming at me. She's like, why are you saying that? I said, saying what? That the Easter Bunny is not real. I said, did I say that? Oh, I'm sorry if I said that. But yeah, we always have a fallout on these big occasions. Birthdays, Christmas, Easter. They never end. They never end with the kids going to bed, me reading Goldilocks and the Three Little Slippers. It doesn't end like that. It just ends with, like, they're screaming, I'm crying. But anyway, enough about my family, Andrew. We've just spoken about that as well. Birthday. I cannot believe it's been another year, because we were meant to obviously have big celebrations for your 40th, because that's what you do. It is a milestone. I was going to say half of your life, arguably not, but it's a milestone nonetheless that we missed. We missed it. And I had no idea it was your birthday until stuff started popping up, of course, on Instagram. And I'm like, hang on, is what's going on here? I saw the one with you sat around with Easter eggs playing for Newcastle, that meme that's gone viral with a couple of happy birthdays around it. So I was late in the day. Happy birthday, partner.
Bloody good weekend for it too. The sun was out. European rugby was back. Good weekend for that as well, wasn't it?
It was. It was. Yeah, we sat out in the garden for a couple of the days with the kids, took them to a park on another day. And the sun down here was just beating down on us, 14, 15, 16 degrees. But I got a tan. Got a bit of a tan this weekend. So plenty of ruggers on as well. Too much ruggers, some might say, to catch up with. Because obviously there was 8 games in the Champions Cup and 8 games in the Challenge Cup as well. So I haven't watched them all. But I've watched enough to know what's going on, and some of the referees have had a shocker that we'll get to at some point. But there we go. I mean, what a weekend. Was it as warm up in Scotland?
What do you think? I mean, it was warm for Scotland. It was 5 degrees, 6 degrees. We've had a bit of snow. We've had a bit of snow as well. But yeah, just same old. I actually watched more rugby this weekend than I thought I might have. More because I was engaged in some of the... I was going to say the plate. Can't call it the plate, can you? Challenge Cup. The Challenge Cup. So I watched more games in that than I kind of thought. And Leicester Connor, I had to watch that because my mate at Leicester called me out last week, didn't he, for calling the lads idiots and stuff.
Brett?
Yeah, Deeks called me up and said, why are you saying that? Because he said, you were one of the biggest idiots at Leicester. I said, yeah, but Brett, I'm with Spotify now. I'm 37 years old. So I've obviously watched the Leicester Connor game and I'm thinking, Leicester look very good. Physical, scoring, driving lineouts, identity. Maybe I was a bit harsh calling them idiots. Then Moroni scores a try and he bows. He does this kind of curtsy bow to the crowd. And as we know, you got no fans. So there's no fans there. So kind of cemented my perspective of this new Leicester team, who I'm impressed with, but maybe I was a bit harsh calling them idiots. I don't remember. Did I call them idiots?
Probably, Jim, but...
Who knows? Don't listen to whatever I say. It's Spotify.
That's last week's opinions, mate. This week's is what matter.
Good to you were at Sandy Park. Good to see Exeter beat Leon.
Yeah. It's kind of weird, isn't it, Jim, going to a game where there's absolutely no fans and you're commentating on it and there's no background noise, no crowd noise, nothing.
And they can hear you. They can hear you saying, what's going on here?
Yeah.
I thought we did very well on commentary again. Leon, to be fair, started very well.
They did. They went 14-0 up. It was, it was interesting. They flew out the traps and then Exeter slowly wrestled control back. Johnny Hill with what is turning out to be the worst lid and look you've seen in the Premiership and the Champions Cup for a long, long time. Scored a couple, set one up himself in the first half as well. And Exeter, once they got over that first sort of 15, 20 minutes of Leon flying out the block, scoring 2 tries, you know, and then wrestled back the control of the game, they were never going to lose it. Leon were, they've got no European pedigree really. They're a good team. They were missing Tuasova and a couple of others, and Exeter made quite a few errors, uncharacteristic errors actually, that they'll kind of be glad they've got rid of, or hopefully got rid of this week, because they're playing Leinster next week in the quarters now.
That's the thing, when I watched that game and I was saying, I always thought they were going to win, but you could see it was a bit of a struggle at the start, is when we knew that they were going to play Leinster, because Leinster obviously went through because Toulon couldn't play. You're thinking, actually, from an Exeter perspective, that is probably the best game you can play because of the physicality, because they were under a little bit of pressure, because they didn't play overly well. So, yeah, I was very jealous that you were there, Andrew. I was sat home.
No, it's good to be out of the house. Although the 4-hour drive, I mean, it's been weird, hasn't it? Because we've been locked down for over a year now. And so we haven't probably done a proper day's work for a long time where you're traveling, doing something, going back. The 4-hour drive there and the 4-hour drive back and stood up on comms when I'm on crutches and having to hobble up these tiny little stairs to get to the gantry. I got home, My back was fucked. I was absolutely knackered. And I just thought, this must be what it's like for Jim when he drives up and back from Scotland.
No, it's amazing, I'll be honest.
Goody, what happened with Wasps? They almost won a game, didn't they?
Andy Rowe, look at him. He's jumping. To be fair, they did almost beat one of the best teams in terms of Clermont and the stature. But again, I don't want to be horrible. They put in a good shift.
They did. And Clermont, you know, I actually, and we both spoke about it last week, I was actually a bit nervous around Clermont putting a decent whack on Wasps this weekend. But shows how little we know about rugby sometimes, James, because Wasps should have won it. And you look back over the game, there's a few talking points. Minozzi would have scored a worldie of a try if he'd have just held it close to his chest instead of putting it down. That would have put them 14-0 up. And then Wasps discipline. It's been a running theme throughout the year, really. The discipline at the back end of the game, they just gave two real stupid penalties away when they were 5 points up with about 2 minutes to play. They were in Clermont's half as well. Just no need for it. They've been pretty good defensively throughout the game. Listen, Clermont had threats all over the park and they defended for the most part exceptionally well, played with an intensity that has been lacking in other games if you're a Wasps fan or player or coach having watched those games. But the big thing for me and the annoying thing, and I love Frank Murphy, played with him at Leicester. I think he's a really good referee. And I question perhaps why Wasps didn't make a bigger scene of it. The try that Matsushima scores, the winning try, one phase before, Morgan Parra's passed it about 3 yards forward to Fritz Lee.
And he's
It was so forward. It was unbelievable.
It was flat.
Mate, it wasn't. It was definitely forward. But it didn't get checked. And if I'm, you know, maybe the Wasps boys were just completely out on their feet. Maybe no one realised it was a forward pass. Yeah, I was just disappointed that didn't get checked. But Wasps, they've just lost with a clutch kick from Cammy Lopez. And a lot of people think that Cammy Lopez looks like me a little bit. Slightly overweight fly half that is either sometimes really bad or sometimes okay.
I don't know if he'd be happy with that. I don't know if he'd see that as a compliment. I would.
But yeah, he slots the kick to win it. And it's just heartbreaking for Wasps because Clermont are a powerhouse. But again, as we've seen many times, and Jim, you've been part of those Saracens teams that have dusted Clermont when perhaps people would have thought they'd have been a lot better. They've got the big choke in them, haven't they, Clermont? And I thought that was going to be their choke. So maybe this is their year.
I don't know.
I don't think it is. But they had a big choke in them, didn't they? It was like Clermont just rocked up expecting, like most people did, that they just walked the game because Wasps weren't in great form. But they snuck over the line at the end, didn't they? Even though it was a forward pass from Morgan Parra to Fritz Lee, about 3 yards. Frank Murphy, why didn't you check it?
Because it was flat. The thing is about Clermont, and listening to Benjamin Kayser and chatting to him, having played against Clermont as well, when I realised how much they obviously struggle mentally with the Champions Cup or the Challenge Cup is when they won the Challenge Cup. So I think it was a couple of years ago when they won the Challenge Cup, and the celebrations around winning the Challenge Cup. I don't want to be horrible to the Challenge Cup, but I'm thinking from a Clermont perspective, like they're a team that you think should win Europe.
Yeah.
You could see, like, I think Kayser was crying and he was speaking after the game and the emotion around it. And it shows that there is, clearly there's a mental block with Clermont.
And Bordeaux were just too strong for Bristol in the end, weren't they?
Oh, shame for Bristol's.
Well, there's some big talking points from this. And Mike Adamson, again, the old ref. And the TMO, Neil Patterson, Scotland, Jim. But mainly the person that needs the blame, and we've both been there, Jim, when we've been commentating on games that are in France that are led by a French director looking for replays and they've just got like one or two views when there's about 25 cameras there. So Bristol's are 5 points down with about 10 to go. Bordeaux have just had someone in the bin. And so you're thinking this is Bristol's time to dominate. This is Bristol's now last 10 minutes, you're going to win the game. Kane Douglas got sin-binned. Bristol's go on the attack. They're pumping away in Bordeaux's 22. Ball comes out. Decent pass. Scott Higginbottom slaps the ball down with one hand. And you actually see on the replay, his fingers get sort of bent back a bit as the ball gets knocked down. What happens is the Scottish ref, Mike Adamson, says play on. TMO, play on. Bordeaux go the length of the field, score the try to go, I think it was then 29-17, and pretty much put the game to bed. And then they got another late try as well. But they go back and check it, and the French director, he basically said, no, we have no angles, no more angles to see. We just have this angle, which is not conclusive and not possible to find more. Basically, he knew it was a knock-on, And Bristol, they haven't come out and ranted and raved about how bad it was, but we can on here. It is a shocker, an absolute stinker from the
It is funny, though. We don't want to be laughing on Bristol's behalf, and obviously them not going through. But, you know, let's call in Philippe. He knows that there's angles to show, but he does not want to share. I not share the angle.
But for me, the decision then should have been, it's a slap down with one hand. It's a yellow card to Higginbottom. Bordeaux go down to 13 men for the last 10 minutes. They're 22-17 up. Of course they are, but then Bristol are probably winning the game. So if you're a Bristol fan, outside of it, you think, yeah, it's just classic French, typical, you know, French director, not possible. But if you're a Bristol fan, you're probably absolutely raging. And credit to Pat Lam, he's not come out and really hung a TV director out to dry, or the TMO or the ref. But we can do it on air. It was a disgrace.
And Jim, Edinburgh didn't have much luck over there either, did they?
Yeah, it was bad luck, yeah.
Didn't have much luck. They had their pants pulled down over their head, skids showing everywhere. The dogs licked the skids, then he's put them back on the head.
They got shat on.
What's going on, Jim?
The headline should have been, Edinburgh been shat on. That should have been it. Oh, my Camille shat. It's his fault, and his fault only, that Hamish Watson has not come on. Hamish said to me, if I've got a Ravo's arm just put on us as a team, I can't come on the pod. Guinness player of the Six Nations or no Guinness player of the Six Nations. We've just had 50 put on us. We've had a Ravo's arm put on us. I was like, mate, it was in Paris. And there's a few things that came out of that game. Hamish Watson's unbelievable, so that is still there. Vakatawa is Vakatawa. Racing have got some young players coming through. So Jordan Joseph coming through, I thought he was about 30. Turns out he's 19, 20 years old. He's phenomenal. And do not give Curtly Bill the mic to do a post-match interview. Oh my goodness me. we played against a very good Edinburgh team. What? What's going on here, mate? Young lads coming through. They're good. We just want to get better. Who do you want out of Bordeaux and Bristol? Wow, they're both good teams. You don't know. Currently, you know that Bordeaux are an all right team because you might have played against them once. But absolutely hammered. What can you say?
But talking of interviews, Jim, Cocker's interview after the game. It's like he weren't bothered. He just had your arse handed to your Cocker's 50 odd points. And it was like,
what do you do? So what do you expect though? So it's like,
I thought there'd be a bit more emotion in him. It's like he's out. Is he out of there? What's happening?
It's like having your pants pulled down, Andrew, but you don't have a cord. It's like they've been pulled down that many times that there's no elastic holding it in. You can't, you got to concede. It's like, but yeah, that just shows. It's like, you look at that Racing team on paper compared to Edinburgh. You've got Blair Kinghorn, as much as he's a good back three player, horrendously, they don't know what he's trying to do with that, is the golfing talent is there to see.
Well, one English side who did make it through to the last eight in the Champions Cup is Sale, and we can have a chat now with their World Cup winning scrum half, Faf de Klerk. How are you, mate?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Thanks for letting me join you guys.
Faf, we've been waiting to have you on since you won the World Cup a couple of years ago. It's class to have you. Firstly, we need to ask you, you got ball bagged by Jake Ball at the weekend. It's obviously done the rounds on social. How are you? How is the lid? I mean, it obviously made a bit of a mess for it for a few seconds. Are you okay?
No, I'm all good, mate. No, it's fine. Just a bit of a rugby incident, but no hard feelings at all.
Just on that, because there's obviously another picture that's gone round from, I believe it was the World Cup, where he's grabbing you. Is there a bit of history there? Is it something that you notice, or are you just that little scrum half that goes at people, whoever you're playing against anyway?
I don't have any issues with him. He might have an issue with me. we did have a chat after the game, and I don't think there's any animosity, but obviously that's how the game goes. They obviously want to try and get their team on the go, and that's one way of doing it, is to spoil the ruck for us and to stop us getting quick ball. And it just happened. I think it looked, maybe afterwards, when I looked at it, it was maybe a bit more serious than what I initially thought. Hopefully there's no animosity and we can just get along playing again.
Yeah, because on that, when you actually got hit, you then look at the assistant referee on the sideline, you're kind of asking him what's going on. Were you asking him just to be, because you were hit off the ball when the ball was still in the ruck, or were you actually asking that, hey, I've just been belted in the head here?
No, according to me, the rule is if the ref calls ball out, the guys can have a go at the ball. You can't play the player. So that was, I was asking about. I was fine with, if he said the ball was out, then you can have a go at the ball, but I'm pretty sure you can't have a go at the player. So that was my initial thought of it. If I lifted the ball, fair play, he could have tackled me, but that's just what I was asking. So I wasn't even sure about the head contact. After I saw it on the replay, then I saw, okay, maybe there's something more to this, but the refs cleared it and yeah, we had to play on.
Don't bother asking what the rules or the laws are. I don't think anyone knows what's going on at the minute, Faf. But what we do know is you lads were class at the weekend, and you know we've got a good relationship with Sale. You know, it's a team that me and Goody never play for, but we both love. Obviously, Simon Orange has been on before. I spoke to Al Sanderson when he first got the job. It looks like, which we kind of thought it would be with Alex Sanderson taking the reins, that there would be a spike in emotion that he spoke about. I know he spoke to you lads about it. There could potentially be a dip. But then the main thing is building that culture and building a team and a squad that can compete with anyone. You look at Sale's social media leading into that game. They thought it was the last chance saloon in Europe. I don't think that anyone thought you were going to go down there and do what you did to that Scarlets team. How good is it being in this Sale squad? It's easy to say that when you're winning, but has there been a real shift in the environment with Al Sanderson coming in?
No, 100%. I think obviously on the training side of things and getting the tactical side of things right, but I think Al's a lot to do with mentality. How are you going into the game? Are we preparing well enough on that side? He really gets into themes of things when we go up against the side, trying to really understand how they want to play, and we're trying to take that away from them. And I think he's been really good with that. And also, just other things like trying to make it interesting at training, have a laugh, just not be all serious. You need to have that little bit of fun side to it as well, which we really appreciate. When it goes bad or when it goes good, those type of things can't change. And just all about how you feel in training, how you feel in game time, and just try and improve on those little things.
And I know Alex Sanderson always likes a Malbec Sunday, where he can sit back and enjoy a bit of red wine. Was it a Malbec Monday? Because obviously your game was on the Sunday and you had Easter Monday off, hopefully.
I think this Malbec Sunday thing is more than a Malbec daily thing for him. I'm pretty sure he had a few red wines on Friday night as well, watching the La Rochelle game. So, yeah, I think it's more often than a Sunday. But I think there were a few beers on the bus back home. We enjoyed that, and I think then our Sale Jets team played on Monday, so he ended up going to that game as well against Newcastle. So that's great to see that he's also doing that effort with the boys not involved, showing his interest over there. So that's important to get that whole entire squad effort.
I remember playing against the Sale Jets many a time. Faf, I don't know if you ever saw me play, mate, but you wouldn't have seen them games, that's for sure. You know, with Al Sanderson, I work with him at Saracens. I can't speak highly enough of the guy. One of the comparisons that's kind of out there is around how Razzy Erasmus has built the culture in the South Africa squad. I watched the documentary Chasing the Sun, I think it was called. Absolutely amazing. And to get that insight and that kind of emotion and what it takes to motivate individuals, I see there why people would say potentially there's some comparisons. Obviously, at Sale, there's a lot of South African lads, and we know that the love and the emotion is needed to manage some of the players. Is it right in saying that comparison is quite similar with Razzy and Al?
There's a lot of similarities, definitely. Obviously, playing for your country, you can sort of get a more like a passionate side of it. We played for, obviously, a lot of things playing for South Africa where over here, there's not those challenges, as I can, if I can mention that. So there's a lot more to play for instance, if you play for your country. But I think in mentality side, getting yourself up for the game, making sure your teammates is up there and ready to go, and trying to get into that passion side of things is definitely similar, and similar themes to what we did at the box. So definitely a lot more similar, but obviously you can get a bit more deeper if you play for your country and with all the challenges that we faced during the World Cup and the people back home.
And you talk about that, and winning the World Cup was obviously huge, and we might delve into that a bit in a minute. But sort of post-World Cup, we saw a few celebrations back in South Africa, but then it was very much a lot of the players dispersed and it was back to business with their clubs around the world. And South Africa haven't played, the Springboks haven't played since the World Cup final, which seems crazy now, obviously, due to COVID and everything that's going on. How hard has that been for you guys collectively to try and stay together? Because winning the World Cup must be, you know, it's the pinnacle of any player's career. And you've not been able to get back together as a group to play or train again, really, have you? So it must be really hard emotionally to stay connected with those guys after achieving the highest of highs in winning it in 2019.
Yeah, definitely. There is challenges behind it. But in our age or decade, you can probably, it's a lot easier to have a chat with one of your mates. And we still, all of us on numerous groups that we still communicate on, whether it be laugh or any information passing around. So we have stayed in contact with a lot of the guys, and we obviously try and watch each other's games and try and just say well played or you did brilliantly there, stuff like that. So we are in contact with a lot of boys, like you said, sharing that with some of your mates and being in Japan for more than 2 months, we really got close and really became great mates, not just playing partners, but really good friends. So just trying to keep in touch, just to check in. It's sort of just one of those things that you do if it's one of your, not your rugby friends. So I think that's made it a lot easier. And now these days you can just do a video call and catch up. So it has been challenging, but really, really excited to hopefully see the boys quite soon.
You talk about the team ship and the South African players and how tight you guys are. We're now seeing more come over to the Prem. There's, you know, me and Goody have said, if the team's struggling to go forward, just bring in some South African talent and you'll be all right. You get on the front foot. You see, look at Leicester. You know, Jasper Wiese has turned up to there and he's almost changed the club by the way that he plays. I know there's a couple of others in the team, but what do you say to people now that are keen to come over to the Prem and play? And because it's quite a difficult league to play in. There's games every single week. It's quite challenging. But for whatever reason, you South African lads seem really suited to the style of rugby that we play in the Premiership.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I agree with you. It's probably one of the best competitions I've been involved in. And week on week, if you don't turn up against whoever, they probably going to get pumped. So it is really physical. And I don't know, maybe they've just been blessed with amazing genes. So they're just very physical and strong. So I think that has something to do with it.
They have. Yeah. They have. I love how you say they and not we.
No. I've got a lot of things going for me, but not that part of it. So, yeah, I think if the guys are back home, really enjoy the tough physical stuff. Obviously, in certain games over here, it's becomes really slow and wet. So you can sort of line guys up on defense. So you have to really be physical in your carries. And on the flip side, you can line guys up on defense. And if you have that side of your game, I think you'll adapt well here. And then also got some great coaches also that you get involved with, and you play with world-class players all around you. So I think you lift your game automatically. If you're an outsider coming in, maybe you're not well-known and you're playing against international players all around you, you sort of need to lift your game. And I think that's what happens more often than not.
It used to be a thing where obviously the pound to the rand was massive, and that arguably was a reason. Now it's obviously not like it was a few years ago, and more lads are coming to the Prem as opposed to France. So I imagine you'd be a port of call where people would say, Faf, what's it like playing in the Prem? We see obviously Gloucester have got a few South Africans playing as well. Is it more if there's more of you at a club, which it obviously is at Sale, it seems to be more comfortable for lads to come?
That's definitely a factor. I think if you got an opportunity to go to two different clubs and there's a few more familiar faces at one side, you probably tend to go that way. But it's also, you need to be conscious of the fact that maybe too many isn't always great for a club environment. That's something that we've spoken about as players individually, to see if that has an effect on some guys. And that's something that you need to be cautious of as well. So the players from South Africa also need to buy into the English way of life, the culture, the language. We need to invest in that as well. So it comes from that side as well. But it does, I think it definitely does make an impact. And obviously if Sale wants a certain type of player and we have contact with that guy back home, put them in touch, it's an easier way to get players here. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, probably money will talk, but that does make a bit of an influence.
Yeah, good honesty. I like that. Let's talk about culture then, because ultimately at Sale, there is probably 50-50 South Africans and English players. What culturally are you enjoying about Manchester? Is it the sunshine? Is it the rain? Is it the football? Is it Oasis? But you know, what is it in Manchester that is culturally appealing to you boys? Because you have to settle in, don't you? It's not all about just bringing the biltong over and the braais and everything. You do have to immerse yourself. And we know, you know, I'm good mates with Mark Quato. He's always banging on about the sunshine up in Manchester. Yeah, any time I go there, it's always pissing down with rain.
The sunshine, sunshine. The
sunshine. This would have been a great, great little town if the weather was a bit better. We just had snow now the sun's out again. It's so weird. I think for me, coming over originally was just getting to know Manchester, getting to know the surroundings, seeing different spots was always fun for me, starting to travel a bit. Firstly, start to travel around the UK. And then Manchester is a great city too, in terms of restaurants, in terms of live shows, and you can just go out and have a good night if you wanted to. There's a lot of things to do. And I think if you sort of embrace that side of it and not try and make it, come over here and try and make it South Africa, because then you're never going to be happy. You have to embrace the weather. You have to embrace the cold and try and figure out ways to make it fun for yourself. If you're going to not accept that things, you're always going to be doom and gloom if you think about what the weather's going to be like tomorrow and you can't really get up for it. So sort of found ways to make it fun. And we got a lot of great English lads at the club that showed us around since we got here. When me and John Ross came over the first time, the boys really pulled us in and took us to the countryside, took us to shows, coffee shops that are really good. And we settled in quite quickly in terms of that. And fair enough. And then when the weather starts turning and we can have a barbecue for the boys, we put that up for them. So it's just sort of blending those cultures. But you can't just come over here and think it's going to be South Africa. You need to immerse in the culture and really enjoy that side of it as well, because you learn so many new things.
Yeah, definitely. And what one thing also, your hair stayed blonde. Is that the sunshine or is that a bit of product that's going in there?
A lot of chat about my hair. I've couldn't see. It's the longest it's ever been, and it's a bit of color, but it's grown out about 30 centimeters. So I need to get that checked out whenever I can. Yeah, I'm missing the salons a bit, mate.
Faf, can I just put something to you? If I don't know whether you know why you'd even want to do a bet with me and Goody, you've got no idea who we are. We know who you are. if you lads win the European Cup, is there a chance you might shave your hair off? That's kind of what Al Sanderson has told me to put to you.
This chat started today. Actually, Jono mentioned, "Yo, what would you do if we cut your hair off?" And I'm like, "Well, I'm not going to be happy, but I'm probably going to have to accept it." But I don't want to cut my hair.
But surely if you win the Champions Cup, it could be a thing, couldn't it? Because it's a big statement. I mean, let's be honest, after the back of the performance at the weekend, we could say it here because, you know, there's probably 3 million people going to listen to this, that Faf de Klerk will shave his hair off when Sale win the Champions Cup this year.
Mate, I won't commit to that, but I think there's enough. Yeah, yes, that's a big call, mate. You sprung that on me.
Well, we'll have a think about it. We'll do the opposite. I'll grow it. I grow mine, but I don't know if you saw it before. It might take me a good 10 years to grow that.
Oh, good stuff. Well, let's look forward then to this weekend. Obviously, quarterfinal time, La Rochelle away. Tough fixture in terms of size and power that they've got in their ranks, but also the ability around the offloading game that we saw Friday night. You must be looking forward to that because you boys love a physical battle as well, don't you? Across the park, you know, whether it's the South African boys in the squad, the English boys, you know, the Curry lads and whatever, and even AJ McGinty. 12 out of 12 tackles at the weekend. I ain't ever done that in my career.
He's got a cauliflower ear.
Yeah.
He has. Looking forward to the game at the weekend. Tell us a little bit about how this week's going to pan out for you boys.
Yeah, so obviously it's a short turnaround for us. So that's something that we're conscious of. One training day that we obviously going to lose. Today was a very more of a review day, looking at the weekend that passed and obviously then starting to look into La Rochelle. I think a good thing was we obviously, a lot of us watched them play against Gloucester over the weekend. So that's already like sort of puts us in a good headspace going forward. So we'll have training tomorrow and then training on Thursday will be our tough day. So I think looking ahead, it's like you mentioned, we've mentioned all those challenges that you guys just mentioned, physical side. I think that's where you want to be as a player. You want to be tested against the best, and in the physical side of things, it's going to be a one-to-one battle. It's going to be one of them against one of us, and we're going to see who's going to come out on top. And that's more often than not when it's going to come down to on that game. But I think we might have a few tricks up our sleeve, hopefully going down the week, to see if we can get some space. So I'm very excited for that challenge. It's obviously a massive game for us. So I think the boys will definitely be up for it.
Yeah, I imagine out of all the teams that La Rochelle arguably would have wanted after the weekend's game, it wouldn't have been you lads. It's quite phenomenal, really, how you played against Scarlets. Let's just talk a little bit about South Africa then. You mentioned communicating with the lads still and FaceTiming and obviously playing against some of the lads as well. Much communication with the management? I mean, you're watching the internationals unfold now. They're obviously the Six Nations, the Autumn Nations Cup. There's obviously a Lions tour, hopefully, fingers crossed. We think it's in South Africa. Is there much communication with the management? I mean, we're talking it's in 3 months' time or something like that. So you've not played, obviously wouldn't have played a match.
Not been a lot of chat. I think the first thing they needed to sort out was where it's going to be played. And I think before they knew that, they couldn't really speak to us at all. There has been a little bit of chat to set up a few meetings going ahead. But nothing much as of yet. I think hopefully we can meet up with a lot of the coaches when I think it's a Rainbow Nations Cup is here, and a lot of teams come over, and hopefully some of the South African coaching staff will come over as well, and hopefully get a chance to meet up. But I think for now it's still just really focusing on your personal performance to do well for your club, and then hopefully get selected. But as you mentioned, it hasn't been that much chat yet. I think we know now that it's sort of 90% going to be in South Africa. So that's a positive. Well, for me, it's a positive. And so that's the first little hurdle out of the way. But I think hopefully in weeks building up ahead, we'll be in a bit more contact with them.
And you've obviously got a lot of family and friends back in South Africa. We're purely focusing on probably the UK as a, you know, with the pandemic that we're going through and the COVID situation. How's it looking in South Africa? You know, something that I've not looked at myself, maybe I should have done with the Lions tour coming up, but how's the pandemic been coped with over in South Africa? Is it, you know, is there a small chance we're going to see some fans in the stadium potentially?
I'm very hopeful just because it's pretty much all back to normal back home. What I can see and what I've heard from my friends and family, it's pretty normal. Restaurants are open. People are going to go out, enjoy their time. I think there might still be a curfew. I think you have to be at home by 10 p.m. But other than that, it's pretty open. You can do pretty much what you like. Traveling, no travel restrictions in South Africa. So hopefully that's a positive. And now with these new flow tests coming out that you can do a spot test and it gives you a result within 5 minutes. I think that's something that maybe the big stadiums can look into to maybe test guys before they go into the stadium. So as it's going now, I'm very hopeful for it because it's seemingly opened up. It's just up to the UK to decide if they're going to allow their people to travel back home or not, or back to South Africa or not. Yeah.
Sounds like we're in, Jim. Sounds like we're going.
Well, either way, I'm going. If I've got a quarantine when I come home, I'm going. Like, I'm absolutely pumped it's in South Africa. I love the country. Got a lot of friends down there. Played down there when I was younger. Obviously watched the 97s Lions tour that kind of propelled rugby, I'd say, in the Northern Hemisphere. Like, we talk about this in the media and between friends about the importance of the Lions tour being in South Africa. And a lot of the time when we speak about it, when you speak to people, you hear things, it's to do with the money, right? So it's to do with the money that the Lions generates. I don't know if you know anything about the finances around it. And if you do, is that a reason? Is that why? Or is it just because there's a heritage and a kind of history that comes with the Lions tour coming to South Africa? Or is it the fact that the money that that will generate will go into the economy?
I think that's a massive factor for South Africa, obviously, having tourists coming over and really obviously enjoying themselves and spending some money in South Africa. So there is a massive influx, obviously, of money. So I think that is a massive reason. But I was just feeling like wherever it's going to be played, if it's in Dubai or wherever, I'll just wanted to go ahead. That was my first thought when people asked me. And then just it's every 12 years you get to play a Lions tour in your country. That's sort of the tradition. And you want to stay part of that tradition. And what I've heard, I know fans really want to go over there. The players, obviously, also, they don't want a Lions tour in the UK. They want to tour to South Africa and enjoy that part of it as well. So I think the whole I think everybody wants it to be there. And then financially, obviously, it would make sense for South Africa to have it there. It's going to be great. It's probably going to create a lot of more job opportunities, be it for a short time, but it's definitely going to help out a lot.
Yeah, definitely. Let's go back to the World Cup then, because you know, we can talk about the game, we can talk about other stuff. But the one thing I want to ask you about, I know Sia Khaleesi's stolen the show a little bit around being captain and what an amazing person he is and rugby player and ambassador for the game. But the most ambassadorial thing that I saw in the tournament was you and your budgie smugglers having a beer with Prince Harry after you've won it in the changing rooms. Could you just tell us what you're talking about? Was he talking about maybe moving to California then or what was going down? Because
he wants privacy.
That's the best picture I've seen from rugby in a long time.
Yeah, no, not a lot really. Just like he just said, congratulate. He had a fright when he saw me first, and then just I couldn't let the opportunity pass to not say hello. And yeah, I just said congratulations. He basically told the whole sky just he doesn't know of a country that really does not deserves this more, but it needs it more. So that was just great to hear from him. Obviously supporting England at that time, and it was great to hear that from him. Really being honest and being a down-to-earth guy was what meant a lot to me, just showing what type of person he was. And got a good photo from it, so that's always good.
Did he do his buffalo off camera as well? Because I know there was a video where he wouldn't do it on camera. Did he do his buffalo off camera?
No, he didn't. I thought he was going to neck it, to be fair, but he didn't end up doing. But that's Frans Steyn. He's got no filter, so...
I've had a few beers with him.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is as well with Harry, me and Goody, well, I've seen him very pissed before. He said that my kilt looks like a shit version of his nan's curtains, quote unquote. And he told Dylan Hartley as well that he shouldn't be England captain because he's shit, and Dylan was crying. So it's probably better that he didn't chop the beer responsibly in the changing room. But Faf, you know, the World Cup, obviously we talk about it, and the documentary and the content that's arguably going to be made around the Lions tour, that, you know, there's talk of Amazon filming with South Africa and Amazon filming with the Lions. Like, the profile that comes with it now, have you been able to piggyback that after winning the World Cup again, having been playing in the Prem? I know, you know, it just flies by. You obviously win the World Cup, all the hysteria around it, the social media, and next thing, you know, you're back playing and life's back to normal. What's life like for you when you go back to South Africa?
Life in terms of just going back, seeing family, seeing friends, trying to play golf and enjoy myself is pretty normal. But you get recognized quite a bit back home. So privacy is not a massive thing when you go home. I think if you're in a group of friends and they can sort of protect you a little bit, that's always good. But I've always tried to do my part with, if somebody wants a photo or something like that. I was also a young boy once, looking at my idol. So I try and do the best I can in that aspect. But it is difficult just to do normal stuff and go to the shop. I won't say it's that famous that you can't walk around, but it's, sometimes it does get a bit hectic, especially like in Cape Town and those places where they really enjoy their rugby. But I guess it's better that people want to have a photo with you than not want to have a photo with you. So I take the positive from it and rather than the negative.
It's similar to me in Scotland, I'll be honest. It's probably a similar kind
of
thing.
I've heard that.
I don't think it's a... Well, the easy thing to do, Faf, is win the Champions Cup, shave your head, go back to South Africa and no one will know you because you've got no blonde hair anymore. So
that's
it'll be fine.
You see, you're not going to convince me right away. But
so close.
He's there, he was.
All right, Faf. Well, thanks very much for coming on the show, mate. Best of luck for the rest of the Champions Cup and also with the Lions tour as well. Best of luck with the Springboks.
Thanks a lot, guys. Thanks for the call. It was good fun.
Cheers, Faf. Thanks for coming on.
Top
good luck this weekend.
On. Really appreciate
Cheers,
it. Buddy.
Cheers, guys. Bye-bye.
Hell of
a legend.
And a legend. Legend and a lid. So much better. His lid's so much better than Hamish Watson's, isn't it? It just looks like it's meant to be.
Yeah, it's the blonde highlights that he said he needs doing again. But yeah, what a lovely bloke. You know, you see him on the field and he's tenacious and, you know, we know that he gives everything for Sale and any team he plays for. And it winds people up the other way. Of course it does, because you see this little scrum half who, you know, back in the olden days, you might be able to get hold of him and clobber him a bit. But now you can't throw punches. He is the ideal wind-up merchant sometimes for opposition teams. And he's physical as well. But what a lovely bloke. Like most Africans, off the field, down to earth, love the game of rugby, love everything they're achieving and doing, and they're very humble with it. So absolute pleasure to have him on. I could have listened and spoken to him for hours.
I love South Africans, and I love the fact now, and also envy the fact. In fact, I fucking hate it. South Africa, they're all not. They're out in pubs, and I'm still in my garage. So yeah, lovely to have him on.
How positive is that, though? In reality, if South Africa's getting back to some kind of normality, we can do live shows in South Africa, mate.
I don't know what you can and can't do. All I know is that you can't go to the pub, and Faf's got a great load of hair for now, unless he's in the Champions Cup.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details. This episode is brought to you by Lincoln and the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid, featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God. The world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates.
Manchester Toulouse was another cracker at Tolman Park, wasn't it?
Mate, what a game that was. Hell of a ding-dong, eh, Jim?
That was good. And I thought Munster could have won that. But Munster, off the back of losing comfortably to Leinster, were probably primed in terms of physicality, similar to Exeter. They had a tough game the week before. Scoreline against Leinster didn't probably reflect the game. Leinster were significantly better, but Munster are much better now. And I thought they could have won, but Toulouse have got some quality. Well, they've got Cheslin Colby, haven't they?
Well, they've got two of the best players in the world in Cheslin Colby and DuPont as well at nine. And what about LaBelle on the wing? What about his footwork?
Ridiculous.
He absolutely rinsed JJ Hanrahan in about a metre. Not even a metre. It's about 20 centimetres.
I thought JJ Hanrahan, I thought he fainted. That's what I thought happened. happened. Genuinely, I didn't even realise he'd done a step.
But it's fine details, isn't it? So you talk about the quality of player. So Cheslin Colby's on the ball. And if you watch actually what creates the try, Andrew Conway on the wing, Dierlande's covering across, and I think Dierlande would get to Cheslin Colby to make the tackle. Andrew Conway just panics a little bit because it's Cheslin Colby, half steps in, which makes it a 2-1 on the edge, and then LaBelle, all my footwork against JJ Hanrahan. And what happens is there's actually three defenders in the picture and only two attackers. They fly through. No one gets taken out. So then it's a simple 2v1 with DuPont, who goes under the sticks. Brilliant try. Brilliant try. But it was a bit of a ding-dong. So at one point, Munster get themselves back ahead. And that was a crucial bit where Andrew Conway just kind of paused for half a second. And that split second at the top tier of Champions Cup rugby is the difference. But the other one, 23-all, Marchand, his try. What about the line-out? It's a one-handed take. The skill is unbelievable, but it's about 4 yards, not straight, Wayne Barnes. And your TMO, who's not looking at it.
Oh, let it go. Andrew.
Exactly. But I saw Wayne Barnes, people were questioning him at the weekend. And I've looked into it. I'm like, why are they going to Barnsley? Because he's the best ref in the world. And then you start looking at some of the Munster fans not happy with some of the decision making. You look at the line out, and you're a line out forward, Jim, of ridiculous expertise.
Specialist. Oh, thank you. I thought that was coming. I'm not just a line out forward. Specialist.
Specialist, yeah. So it's a 5-metre line-out that Munster have competed for at the back of the line-out, jumper on jumper, and he tapped it down with his outside hand, nowhere near straight, so it should have been a not straight. Marchand scores the try, and at that point it was 23-all. So some question marks around that as well, Mr. Wayne Barnes.
Well, you know Barnes is going to come back on his YouTube channel with his action figures, and he's going to talk about it. He's going to talk about the one-hand take. He might even talk about sending a Scotland player off when asked him not to. I haven't watched it for a couple of weeks, but I might go back and watch the line out, see how not straight it was. I'll call him out on Twitter. He doesn't follow me. I ain't going to follow him. And I'm sure it'll be on his YouTube show, which actually I quite like.
If you get a chance, have a look at the line out.
I love the Goody. We've got like, he was the Twitter police, and now we've got like the forward pass not straight police as well. Like we're
But the Munster fans want us to debate this, Jim. I'm telling you.
Okay, well we are. And I tell you what, I actually think, like, you talk about me being a line out specialist and just a specialist of life. These people that, I think it's Tony Spreadbury, and we know Spreader's getting on a bit. I think he's only about 50, but he looks about 80. You could take the reins of being the head of the referees and saying, lads, this is not good enough. Yes. I think that is potentially, if things open back up and life isn't how it was, it could be a new role for you in that environment. I don't know whether they'd let you in with open arms. I don't know. But because you are multilingual like me and you do speak French, I don't know whether you speak French well, but you do the accent really well, you might be able to have a good rapport with the French referees.
Can you imagine that? No, I don't think that's happening. But yeah, listen, Toulouse, bottom line is Toulouse, I think, for me, were just the better team on the day.
What happened with Toulon and Dublin? Out for waffles or what?
Oh, probably. We had Lanny on. He was looking forward to it.
There's no waffle shops open in Dublin at the minute. They're on lockdown, aren't they?
So it definitely wouldn't have been them.
No, but it was basically, so it was one of the front rowers tested positive. I think it was the Wednesday or something. And he hadn't travelled with the squad. They all retested them. This is where Toulon were a bit aggrieved by it, or felt a bit aggrieved by it, because this prop hadn't travelled with the squad to Dublin. They all got to Dublin, tested again. They're all negative. But because of the contact tracing, they couldn't field a front row because they said, look, you've been in too close a contact with this one guy, even though you have tested negative. So Toulon just lost their shit, basically. And they've gone out in the press and said, we might not play in the European competition again. You know, it's a disgrace, all this stuff. And I get their frustration, but also when you sign up and agree, the world we're living in now is a crazy world, isn't it? And the COVID pandemic, even though everyone's tested negative, you still have to do the contact tracing and see who has come into close contact with that person, because it might take a few days to show up on a positive test, which we all know is one of the issues. So, yeah, I'm sure the Leinster boys would have loved to have won that game, played it and won it properly. But Toulon rocked up to Scarlets in the group stage as well, didn't they? And said they didn't fancy that game as well, I think. And so it's not been a great European year for Toulon.
All I know is when we speak about this situation, Andrew, I've never in my life, apart from that song by Neo and Pitbull, like, I just turned this negative into positive. I've never said the words negative and positive so much in my life, ever. I hope I never say them words ever again.
Well, when you, as a player, you were a Negatron, and you always went for Sappuccinos, right?
Sappagizer. So I was the polar opposite. I was basically, I'd sap the life out of everyone, but I'd hit them with some energy and comedy, and then that would energize them again, hence the Sappagizer. But just on Toulon and the Leinster game, probably similar to what we spoke about with Munster. I know they lost to Toulouse, but I reckon Exeter have got a better chance this weekend because they had a tough game at the weekend against Lyon, and Leinster have had a week off. And I know we spoke to Stuart Lancaster last week, and we spoke about that Sarries result where I think they were on some mental unbeaten run, and then they played Sarries and got hammered because they hadn't been tested. I know Munster tested them in the Pro 14 final, but it was still a fairly easy game for Leinster's first/second team. So you wonder, going into this week, having missed a week, missed a game, and some people might say, yeah, well rested. Slightly different, maybe, because they've not had a tough match.
Should we have a look ahead to the quarterfinals then?
Oh, go on then.
Go on then, weird fish.
Do you want to start with that Exeter-Leinster game and talk us through what you think might happen there? You've given your thoughts already, Jim.
The hard one is, and when we spoke to Lanny last week, he said something like they had 57 players at one point. So, like Jim said, the only game they've played recently was the Pro 14 final against Munster, which they didn't pick their first choice team, did they? Sexton's on the bench, James Lowe was on the bench, there's a few injuries, Ringrose is out, James Ryan's out as well. So it's just trying to find that balance of players that haven't played and have played, and who do you start? You know, no doubt they'll start with Kean Healy and Tag Furlong and those boys. They'll have a lot of their internationals back, but Exeter haven't been themselves recently. You know, the Premiership games, they've kind of squeaked through a few, you know, at home to Quinns. Yeah, they've also changed the team for Gloucester. And then this weekend's game that I commented, there was loads of errors, uncharacteristic errors from them as well. So that will sharpen the mind. Hard one to call. Exeter. I think Jack Noel will be back this weekend, potentially, from what I hear, which is huge news for him. Exeter, England, not so much because there's no games, but definitely the Lions, because I know Warren Gatland likes him. It'd be great to see him back again after a long while out. I'm just going to go Exeter by five. They're going to sneak it by five.
I'm going back on what I've said. I reckon Leinster by six.
La Rochelle versus Sale.
What about Big Willie, Little Willie Skelton?
Mate, tell the offload that. Tell Bottia that as well. I mean,
Bottia, how good is his Tash? I mean, as a player, sorry.
Yeah. He's just got everything. You know, he's played back row as well, but as a centre, I don't reckon there's a centre in the world that can do what he can do. The power, the pace, the offloading game. You know,
and he likes his back rubbed as well. Rono Garcia, yeah. Likes his back rubbed. I'd rub his back.
Imagine him and Randrandra in the centres playing against those two.
My goodness me.
And then you've got Nandolo on the wing for Fiji as well, when you talk about units. But yeah, they've got class, haven't they? But any team going over to La Rochelle that needs some physicality, just look what Sale did to Scarlets at the weekend. And it was a Scarlets team littered with internationals as well, wasn't it? So they've got the power game that they can cope with La Rochelle's power. Unfortunately, Lou Diag is out for quite some time. I think he broke his leg or his ankle or something in training last week. So yeah, Sale have got it in them. I just think La Rochelle have got a little bit too much quality and X factor.
Oh, because we've had Faf on, I'm going to go for Sale. And I love House Anderson and South Africans. So, oh, but what about Bottia? If he'd rubbed my back... No, he won't rub my back. He won't touch me. Not allowed. Sale by three.
Bordeaux and Racing.
You think on paper, and I keep talking about paper because that's all I can judge it on, and the performance at the weekend with a 50 against hashtag always, that Racing and their history in the competition should do it. But the Bordeaux Beagles, the Bagels, the Bengals, to beat Bristol's the way that they did, although Andrew said it was the referee's fault, they're all hard to call.
The way I look at this game, if this was a top 14 game, Bordeaux would win it. It's a European quarterfinal, Racing every day of the week.
Every day of the week?
In knockout European rugby, this is Racing's to win, I reckon.
Racing.
Racing by eight.
Clermont to lose?
Really hard one.
I'd like to see Clermont go all the way. No, I wouldn't. No, because there's no fans. I'd like to see Clermont go all the way when there were fans, because I love that place. Loved playing there. It's a town of industry. It's raw. It's edgy. It's me. Like, Clermont is a French me.
They are sponsored by Michelin Tyres, Jim, and that's you, mate. Michelin Tyres, you got the rubber ring on.
Very true. So they are me. But I would like to see Clermont win it at some point. But with no fans, I'm not really bothered this year. But at the weekend, Toulouse looked sensational.
Really hard to call, isn't it? Matsushima's dangerous at fullback. Raka, when he's on form, silly good. Petheli Yato, if he's playing. Fritz Lee. They've got absolute world beaters, but it might help them, actually, that they're playing another French team in a knockout game. Do you know what I mean? Because we've seen them choke in a lot of knockout games, but they've generally always been against foreign teams, so Saracens and other teams around that. But, I don't know, Toulouse just look so good at times, don't they? Labelle's come from nowhere, and he's rinsing people in 20 centimetres of space. You know, you've got Chesson Colby, DuPont. Untermack was ridiculous at the weekend, I thought.
How good was he?
And yeah, as much as Clermont got the X factor, I just think Zach Holmes is my mate, so I'm just going to lose.
Oh, Zach Holmes is my mate. Well, I think he is. He knows me. I'll just say it because it sounds good. Toulouse. So I'm going to go for a home win. Clermont.
You're going Clermont? Okay,
yeah. This is their year with no fans.
Right, well, moving away from Champions Cup now, there's been a bit of news floating around. Mike Brown leaving Quins, and he's not happy about it.
No, he's not happy. And I think Rugby Pass released it a while ago that he was going to Newcastle. You can see why. Obviously, he's had a stellar career at Quins, Brownie has. And this arguably carries on and piggybacks the whole Paul Gustard reign. That's what it kind of read to me, was that Mike Brown said he wasn't being kept on. I don't know whether there was talks to keep him on. And it's twofold, right? It's twofold because he's 35. Now, there ain't many backs knocking about at 35. But then on the flip side of that, he's arguably playing better than he's played in the last two or three years. So from a business point of view, and that's what it is, and Mike Brown said it, other players have come out and said it. Rugby is a business. There ain't no loyalty in it. As much as we want there to be, it's professional sport. But he's playing really well. You can see the emotion. He didn't want to leave. He said that. He didn't want to leave. He tried to do everything to stay. Didn't happen. Signed for Newcastle. Dino signed him. He knows Brownie from being at Quinn's. On the 12th hour or the 13th hour after he signed, which is obviously 1 hour after he signed, if we're using the 24-hour clock, they said that he could potentially stay. You kind of were reading that. He's not Ape, but it's a done deal. I think it's a good signing for Newcastle.
Yeah, I think the thing on it, though, is people automatically saying, well, Guzzi just didn't offer him a new deal. And Guzzi clearly didn't offer him a new deal or said there isn't going to be a deal here for you because he was moving the squad on. You know, as Jim said, it's a business decision around his age. And when those conversations were probably taking place earlier in the season, how well was Brownie playing then? Well, probably not that well. And what's happened was Guzzi has then left the club. Quinn's, some of the senior players have started playing well again. So you question actually what happened before. Were they putting him in the jersey? But then as you look at it, Quinn's had plenty of time under the new management structure with the new coaching structure as well. And, you know, with Billy Millard as the team manager, head of rugby, whatever his job title is now, and Laurie Darrenpool, the CEO, they had plenty of time to change the course of action and offer Mike Brown a deal they could have offered him.
No, I think they signed him before. I think Newcastle signed him before. No.
Well, from what I heard, no. They had opportunities to, you know, reading Mike Brown's interview, Harlequins had opportunities, even though Guzzi didn't want him, once Guzzi left, to sign him. And it's like any player, right? You get old in your career and long in the tooth, and Brownie's 35. I remember at Wasps, I signed a 2-year deal at Wasps, and all I wanted was one more year to see out. And Di said, look, Di Young was the head coach. I didn't want to leave. Wanted to stay at Wasps. And it's different for me because Brownie's been at Quinn's for 15 years, but it's also the same because as a head coach, you have to make a decision for what you think is best for the club in the future. And Di, same thing, looked at me. He's like, you're playing really well at the minute,
but you're struggling to breathe here. Like, you are struggling. So walk into this meeting room and not be out of breath. Something's got to give. And this 400 grand deal, has got to give.
But Di said, so he said, look, you're playing every week. You're playing really well. He said, but I can't guarantee you'll be doing that in a year's time. He said, which is when I'm going to need someone younger doing what you're doing now, but better. He said, so I can't see you in a year's time. So maybe Quinn's can't see Brownie in a year's time performing at the level that he demands the cash that he's demanding. Some people go, oh, the loyalty, we'll just offer him 50 grand or whatever. But then it's the whole thing, oh, is that my value? So you then have a different perspective on what the club are offering you. So there's never a perfect ending for any player at any club. You know, you look back at all the players at Leicester that have been there for years and years and years, all the players at Wasps, and, you know, the Simon Shaws, the Lawrence Dallaglios, there's not many James Haskells, Fraser Waters, Alex Kings, loads of boys. You don't necessarily get your own way of leaving a club. You don't get to choose because it's a business. So Quinn's have made a business decision that's not right for Mike Brown to get an extension. Whether that was Guzzi or whether that was Laurie Dalrymple or Billy Millard. So you just move on. And it's hard for Mike Brown because that's all he's been at. But he's got a great opportunity to go to Newcastle. It's an unbelievable night out, Mike Brown. Let me tell you, House of Smith, when the world opens up again, tell the missus and the kids. Tell the missus and the kids that you stay down in London. I'll just go up to Newcastle and I'll fly up and back. They fly players up and back from London every day. That's what they did for me. So it's a great place to be. Brownie, you're going to a club where Dino, you know very well. Nick Easter's on the coaching staff. I think there's some kind of progression potentially around him looking at coaching as well there. So it's a good opportunity for him. But yeah, loyalty's gone in the game, isn't it, really?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned about Newcastle because I don't know if we've ever spoken about this, and we know that I agreed to go to London Irish for 2 years and I didn't go. I'm sorry, but they got relegated, so it was probably a good decision. But I remember, and we all remember because we were doing the podcast there when I was still playing for Saracens, I was playing every game apart from the quarters and the semis and the final, but I was involved in every single game.
Monday night football, yeah.
Albeit we got beat by Wasps by 60 points. I remember trying to sort out my contract and Mark McCall looked me in the eye and he didn't say it, but I could read his eyeballs. He was basically saying, in a year's time, if you were a dog, we'd put you down. I have never, ever read someone's eyeballs so convincingly. you know, if you use the dogger's analogy, my back legs had gone. I had mange. I was blind in one eye. I was deaf in the other eye.
My fingernails
hadn't been clipped, and my bowels were loose. Like, as much as I didn't want to see it, as much as I didn't want to read it in his eyes, I knew it was mercy. As well as I was playing then, arguably the best I played, he knew I was hanging on and there was mercy needed. So, it, like you said, Goody, it's hard for some players to take. And unfortunately, age, as well as other things, comes to all of us. But Brownie's been a great servant to Quinns.
Yeah,
you know, I quite like his feisty. You know, he's got a bit of attitude. He's not like that as a bloke. He's different away from the pitch. And I hope that his, you know, his year or 2 years at Newcastle, I'm sure, will unfold and he'll do really well.
Hey, we didn't chat about it last week, but Cipriani's coming back, isn't he? Going to Bath?
It broke, didn't it, after we'd released the pod?
I tell you what, to be fair to Sips, wherever he's gone, the first year has always gone incredibly well. So, Bath are in need of a tent. Goody, we've spoken about it. Obviously, Priestland's moving back to Wales. And
well, you can see this synergy, can't you, between Stuart Hooper and doing that video giving out the match shirt for the debut. And Sips, who, you know, likes everything. I can't see how, genuinely, looking at Hoops and Sips, someone's got to change there, because from what I hear about Hoops, and you saw the fallout with Freddie Burns was a character that played a little bit off the cuff. You know, sometimes people thought, you know, it wasn't necessarily sticking to a game plan. Sips will want complete control of that game plan, and it might be a bit of a wrestle of power. What I do know is, yeah, Sips, he's been out the game. He's hungry to come back in and play again. You know, he's the sort of player that wants the adulation of people there telling him how good he is. And, you know, he's had a lot of that in his career. But also, you do question, if you're a Gloucester fan, imagine being a Gloucester fan. Yeah, mate, let him go. That's not a problem. He doesn't want to play. And then he signs at your nearest and dearest rivals, Bath. You'd be raging.
Yeah, but I think it was more than that with Gloucester, because there was that, but he was obviously the highest paid player at the club as well. So you've got that as well. Do you know what I mean? And the fact that he weren't playing well, he got dropped and he threw his toys out the pram. So arguably, you could say they got away with it without speaking horribly. But, you know, Bath are a weird club, aren't they? You know, you get rid of one of your best players, Zach Mercer. You get rid of Freddie Burns, who could step in at any point. It's just a weird setup, but
yeah, Sips will do well. Short term,
I hope he does well. And then you can, with that as well, you wonder whether there's talk of Diamond going there. I don't know. I've not heard anything. Let's just say he's going. I've not heard anything. But Dimes worked with Sips at Sale. You know, is there a consultancy thing? How, I don't know. I'm trying to think how it marries up to Hooper being with Sips, the same as you. But it's obviously a done deal.
Well, the thing with it is Hoops needs a 10. You know, you look at what 10s are on the market now. Freddie Burns was never going to go back there because of what Hoops did to him when he was there. Rhys Priestland, as you said, he's off to Cardiff. So what are the 10s are there that are available? It's a marriage of convenience, really, a bit of it. So you sat there thinking,
a marriage of convenience.
Yeah.
My goodness, I might use that. If I can't get to a pub, in the next 3 months, I'm throwing out the marriage of convenience in my house.
Right, should we finish things off with the good, the bad and the ugly?
Yeah, plenty of good this week. We'll start off in France, James. It was more in Ireland.
Oh, okay. Then I saw it. If it was in France, I didn't see it.
Yeah, it was Toulouse winning over in Munster, 40 points to 33. We talked about the game a little bit. Labelle's footwork was just absolutely ridiculous. Cheslin Colby and Anton Dupont, two of the best players in the world at the minute. That was a hell of a performance from them. So well done.
On Anton Dupont, did you see the photo doing the rounds on social with him and Johnny Wilkinson? So when Johnny's at Toulon.
I did.
Basically, yeah, I did. Let's just say Johnny Wilkinson had picked up Anton Dupont and is holding him, cradling him. And that's been posted on social media, which is quite cool.
What else was good? We mentioned him earlier. He hadn't had the best weekend, although he did play pretty well. He didn't have the best weekend in an Edinburgh shirt. He played quite well in that game, but their team were absolutely stinking. Hamish Watson, he gets a nod in the good this week, announced as the Six Nations player of the tournament and the best mullet in world rugby.
Are you going to put him in the bad as well for not coming on?
Possibly, but we'll get to that.
He said next week or the week after.
Yeah, he gets a shout out in the good. Hell of a effort that is to win the Six Nations Player of the Tournament, beating the likes of Lewis Rees-Zammit and co. So, yeah, something that you can look back on in 20 years' time and go, geez, I was the best player in that tournament.
Barkley read out a stat and he said that he hadn't given away a penalty for the whole Six Nations, which, in my opinion, is an unbelievable stat. But for a back row, in terms of how he plays, yeah, he's been class.
Yeah. What else was good? English teams in the Challenge Cup. Bath, Irish, Tigers, Newcastle and Saints all with good wins in the last 16. So we've got five clubs in the quarterfinals of that. And in doing that, we'll mention the French clubs. In the Champions Cup, Racing, Toulouse, La Rochelle, Clermont and Bordeaux all in the quarterfinals after winning their last 16 games this weekend. So big shout out to all those teams. But the good this week can go to one team. One team, one dream. The mighty, mighty Sail Sharks. We spoke to Faf de Klerk earlier. A hell of a victory. 57 points to 14. Domination of the Scarlets. And a big mention has to go to AJ McGinty. How he didn't get man of the match, I don't know. Aka van der Merwe got it, who played pretty well at hooker. But AJ McGinty, he broke Sail's record for the most points in the European game. He scored one try, two assists, 11 from 11 off the kicking tee. And he made the most tackles in the Sale team. 12 tackles for a 10. I didn't make that in my career, son. So AJ McGinty, two clean breaks as well. Absolutely brilliant. He pulled the pants down of Scarlets. A great performance by Sale. So they get the good this week.
I agree. Ken Owens interview after. Shell shocked. We've all been there, son.
Yeah, we have. The bad, well, we mentioned Sale in the good. The bad, we've got to mention Scarlets. Littered with internationals. As I said, their pants were royally pulled down and skid marks on show, taking 57 points at home. Never good. What else was bad? Quins as well. They took 57 points.
All they
home
did.
Versus Ulster. It was Quins under 14s, really. It wasn't, but it was their change-up team. But still, to take 57 points at home, although it was against a strong Ulster team, never good. What else was bad? The Welsh regions, after the highs of the Six Nations, winning the title for Wales. The regions, they all lost. They let the country down.
Well, that's why I thought they were going to struggle in the Six Nations. So that was me basing. Yeah, I'm not going to be horrible.
So that gets a mention in the bad. What else is bad? Will I give it to Edinburgh?
Well, no, don't be horrible because Scotland smashed England. Like, don't. It's long gone now. Okay.
I gave Scotland the good last week for their victory in Paris. And I was going to give Edinburgh the bad this week because they
just give it to a ref.
Their skid marks pulled down and on show, taking 56 points in Paris. Never good. So that gets mentioned in the bad. The bad this week, I'm just going to go to France for the whole of the bad, really. And basically, it's going to be around TV directors, referees, and TMOs. And they're all French. So just kind of this French theme.
I want to hold, Andrew, before we go, I love France as a team, as a country. I've got to say it. Hopefully, when things open back up in 2 years, I'm going to go to France on holiday. So I just want to put that out there to the millions. I like you. I love you. Bon chance, bon courage, mon ami.
Yeah, I enjoy France at times and I enjoy some of their rugby. And I mentioned in the good that they are doing very well. They've got five clubs in the quarterfinals of the Champions Cup. But what they're bad at is a TMO, a referee and a French TV director. So the TMO, Philippe Bonheur, and referee Mathieu Reynal, you're getting mentioned in the bad, missing Jake Ball's hit on Faf de Klerk, saying that the ball was out and he had his hand on the ball. So it is okay. Still a shoulder to the head, Mathieu Reynal and Philippe Bonheur. Shocker.
Very true. Very true.
That's a red card every day of the week. And also the French TV director for not giving more angles for Scott Higginbottom's clear slap down to Mike Adamson and Neil Patterson, the referee and TMO of the Bordeaux against Bristol's game. So the bad this week goes collectively to French TMO Philippe Bonheur, French referee Mathieu Reynal, and French TV director, I don't know his name, but he is French, from the Bristol against Bordeaux game over in Bordeaux. Bad, bad, and bad.
Yes.
And then the ugly, we mentioned it just then, actually. The ugly this week has to go to Jake Ball. His hit on Faf de Klerk. Not only was the ball not out the ruck, Shoulder to the head, straight red card. He could have snapped his knee. We spoke to Faf earlier. No one touches Faf and his lovely hair. The salons aren't open. He can't get his hair dye on it. So you don't need to be ploughing your shoulder, Jake Ballbag, into the head of Faf de Klerk. No, no, no. That is the ugly.
You don't do that.
Thanks, Goody. Thanks, Jim. Thanks, producer Tim. And thank you very much for listening as well. Don't forget to head on over to Spotify and check us out on YouTube as well.
We're on Spotify, Rugby Pod.
Spotty pod, 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 pod.
Oh, see what you've done there. Loved it.